Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
Lord, I take refuge. Let me never be put to shame. In your righteousness, deliver me and rescue me. Incline your ear to me and save me. Be to me a rock of refuge, a strong fortress to save me, for you are my rock and my fortress. Rescue me, O my God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the unjust and the cruel. For you, O Lord, are my hope, my trust. O Lord, from my youth, upon you I have leaned from my birth, and it was you who took me from my mother's womb, and my praise is continually of you.
The sun will rise, the sun will rise, bringing life to the earth as it springs from the ground. The sun will rise, the sun will rise, we will try. All our tears, lay your burdens down. We will dry all your tears, lay your burdens down.
Tim Kreider wrote in the New York Times earlier this summer an article called The Busy Trap. And it has stuck with me all summer because it was convicting of me and it may be of some others in this room. He says that if you have lived in the United States in the 21st century, you've probably had to listen to a lot of people tell you how busy they are. It's become this default response when someone asks you, "How are you doing?" Busy. So busy. I'm crazy busy. Crazy busy. It's pretty obvious, he writes, that this is actually a way of boasting disguised as complaining. I'm so busy. Because then people respond, well, it's a good problem to have. It's better than the opposite. If you notice it, though, like generally speaking, the folks, myself included, who are saying we're busy, it's not because we've stayed up 3 nights in a row on the ICU. It's not because we've been catching 3 buses to work 3 part-time jobs, because those folks, they're not busy, they're actually exhausted. They're tired. But a lot of us love to talk about how busy we are. It's almost this way of lamenting our busyness, but it's all self-imposed, if you think about it. It's self-imposed in this way. It's things that we take on, and then we take on more things, and then we make sure our children take on more and more things, and then we can let everybody know just how busy our lives are. We've become addicted to being busy. And he thinks it's because we dread what we might face in its absence. And that's the part that really, like, hit me. Busyness serves as a kind of existential reassurance, he says, a hedge against emptiness. Obviously, your life cannot possibly be silly or trivial or meaningless if you're so busy. If you're completely booked, if your every hour is in demand, everything must be good, right? We're so addicted to being busy that we do it even when we're on vacation. At least I do. And Wendell Berry writes a poem that describes some of my life, and especially in this social media culture, it might describe yours too. I want to share it with you. Once there was a man who filmed his vacation. He went flying down the river in his boat with his video camera to his eye, making a movie picture of the moving river upon which his sleek boat moved swiftly toward the end of his vacation. He showed his vacation to his camera, which pictured it, preserving it forever, the river, the trees, the sky, the light. The bow of his rushing boat behind which he stood with his camera, preserving his vacation even as he was having it, so that after he had it, he would still have it. It would be there. With a flick of a switch, there it would be, but he would not be in it. He would never be in it. Psalm 71 was written by an old man. An old man who's looking back on his life, noticing the moments where he was actually in it with God. Noticing the moments where he'd been able to put those things aside and live deep in the present moment with those that were around him. He reminisces about the ups and the downs, and his faith is this strong reminder to me that faith in God is no fail-safe insurance against problems and against challenges. But still, the psalmist reminds that God's very nature is to provide refuge, deliverance, rescue. And so I'll read the words again from Psalm 71. In you, O Lord, I take refuge. In your righteousness, deliver me and rescue me. Incline your ear to me and save me. Be to me a rock of refuge, a strong fortress to save me, for you are my rock and my fortress. Rescue me, my God, for you, Lord, are my hope and my trust. See, putting our hope and our trust in a God who delivers is very different than putting our hope and our trust in our busyness. See, we fill up our lives with busyness, it seems, because we dread this possibility of what we might face in its absence. And so it seems to me this morning that we might have something to learn about how to be present, about how to actually vacation from this tradition of Sabbath keeping in our church tradition. See, practicing Sabbath has always meant that we're actively seeking to put our hope in God's trust and God's abundance and God's deliverance. And doing this actually allows us to root our lives in grace. That's why we come back here every Sunday morning to pause, to keep Sabbath, to do just that, to turn our attention from our busyness toward a God who delivers us. And I think that's at the core, actually, of what we want when we go on vacation. We want to be delivered from all of the stuff of life so that we can simply be. So that we can simply be. We want to vacate that busyness. And yet it seems like, I don't know, so many, some are on vacation now and others who have returned. I wish that I had even just a quarter for every time that I had heard this. When someone gets back from vacation, how was it? It was really great. But now I need a vacation from my vacation because my vacation was so busy. Like we've lost track of how to simply be and to trust in that. And so this morning I'm going to invite us to turn to the Jewish and Christian tradition of keeping Sabbath to see how we might unplug from being busy to actually be on vacation. Keeping Sabbath is about recentering our lives on grace. It's the central purpose of worship. In this space, as we keep Sabbath together, we turn our attention to God's transforming love that's way bigger than us, way bigger than we could ever be, beyond us. And so there are two traditions, and I think it's fair to say they're competing in the biblical tradition about Sabbath keeping. And I want to share a little bit about those. The first one that I'll lift up is from Exodus 20. So hear these words from Exodus 20. God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. That's their version of all means all. For in 6 days the Lord made in the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but God rested on the seventh day. Therefore, God blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So rest. God rested in the creation story, giving us a paradigm for resting as well. And then another version of Sabbath keeping comes to us from Deuteronomy. And it's just slightly different. I invite you to listen to this piece. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, or any animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, their version of all means all, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. Hold that part. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day in remembering your liberation. So in Exodus, we have a remembering of Sabbath associated with creation and resting from work. And in Deuteronomy, we have a remembering of the Sabbath that is a remembering of your liberation. And they've been held in tension. You see them in the life of Jesus. You see Jesus going to heal a bent over woman on the Sabbath. And then the powers that be saying, don't do that. That's work. And so when Jesus does that, he draws on the Deuteronomy tradition to say, Sabbath is about remembering liberation. May this woman be set free. But then you see Jesus at other moments taking himself away, finding space to simply be, to rest. And in that, he holds on to the tradition of Exodus to say that God longs for us to follow that pattern of rest. And I think that there is a tension like this in our desires to get away on vacation. We want to get away, to vacate our schedules and be in that emptiness. But in order to do that, we have to plan our vacations. And that's where the edge starts to begin, at least for people like me who love to plan. That's maybe the place I get most excited about vacationing, is just getting ready for it. And then once we're on vacation, it can be very challenging for us to live in that space of just being. At least for people like me, I think that other things might need to be fixed. I might need to be on call just in case. And during that time, we mistakenly think that God needs us for the world to keep turning in circles. But it turns out we're not that significant. We're not. There's another article that I read this week. It was in The Atlantic. And the article's title is Why More Vacation Doesn't Always Mean Happier Workers. It's by Olga Kassan. She writes, it's around this time, it's in August, that during the hot and sleepy, endless season of August, that bloggers like me take note of the fact that the United States is one of the only industrialized nations on earth to not mandate paid vacation time, or even paid holidays off, for that matter. And then she does all of this research, or she goes through all of this research to show how in some industrialized nations, there is a correlation between happiness and mandated vacations. But the United States is this weird outlier where we don't mandate vacations. We hardly allow people to take vacations in certain workforces. And then we also have one of the happiest workforces in the world. So what is the relationship between happiness and vacation? And she struggles with this and teases it out. She says this, if vacations make us happier, do countries with more generous vacation policies have more satisfied workers? And the answer in truth is actually no. It doesn't seem like there is a direct correlation. But there are a few things to lift up. He says, I personally can't fathom making checklists and last-minute trips to Target and then running those and that being enjoyable. But apparently, for the vast majority of us, the thing that we get most excited about, the moment that we're most happy in our vacation process, is the planning part. The planning part. Some of you are looking at me like I'm crazy because you think, I'll go on vacation. Linda doesn't have a problem with this. Let someone else plan this, and then I will rest. This will be fine. I think, though, that in the way that we're addicted to busyness, we create more meaning by getting ready for vacation. At least some of us do. And she says that if you want a happier workforce, one of the things that you could do is just focus on more and more vacations that are all short so that the person is always getting ready for another vacation to fit into our busyness addiction. So I have two thoughts or two wonderings about this. The first is the cynical part of me. And really it all comes down to we're addicted to being busy. So even in our vacationing, we can't escape that addiction. And we create our meaning not by actually vacating our schedules and by being present with the people we want to love, but by getting ready to do that because we can check things off of our list. And then there is a second more hopeful part of me too. And that part says that, no, there's actually this amazing sense of anticipation of what might be as we imagine the possibility of a vacation. We let go of our normal schedules and we start to imagine one that is just us with the folks that we love. I think, though, the truth is, in terms of Sabbath keeping, some of us have become more like the former. We have a schedule on Sunday morning. Actually, very few of you arrive on time, so you might not follow this part of it. But some of us get here right on time because it's on schedule. Eric knows what I'm talking about. This might be me. And we get here on time because that's what we're supposed to do. And then we already have our next thing scheduled. We're going to go with brunch with three people, and we've identified them, and we've written it down in our to-do list. And then after that, we're going to go boot shopping. At least some of us are, I hear today. We have all of these things, and we stack up the things on Sunday, or we have to run to a soccer game, or we can't even be there because of a baseball game. Well, this will start happening when the 49ers start to play. Doesn't matter for me. The Chiefs are further east, so I'm fine. But we stack these things up, and then our Sabbath looks exactly like every other day. It's busy. So therefore, it must be meaningful, too. It must be. What if our Sabbath keeping was different, though? What if Sunday was a time that we rooted our lives in grace in anticipation of what God's unfolding future might be? Just like that joyous possibility of what our vacation could be. What if we could hold the possibility of what God's future might have in store for us? What if vacations were rooted in that kind of anticipation? What if Sabbath was rooted in that kind of possibility? Pastor Steve Garness Holmes, he writes about Sabbath this way. Sabbath is God's gift to us of our being worthless. That doesn't get you a lot of popularity in this day and age. In Sabbath time, we remember that we're not what we do, that we cannot earn our keep or justify our existence. In Sabbath, accomplishing nothing, we have to acknowledge that we can't give God reasons to like us. We can't make God's love appreciate us any more than God already does. We can't contribute to this world any more than we can to simply receive it. No, we just have to sit here. We are useless and beautiful and worthy, and God loves us for no good reason whatsoever. To live into that truth, that wonder, that awe, that is to keep Sabbath. That's to turn from our addiction to busyness, which is all about ourselves, and allow ourselves to rest in the truth of God's love that we can't vacate. We can't run away from that. We're simply always on vacation in God's love. But with Sabbath, we can create time to remind ourselves of that truth, of that grace-filled truth. Dorothy Bass writes about Sabbath like this. Sabbath keeping is not about taking a day off, but about being recalled to our knowledge of and gratitude for God's activity in creating the world, for God's giving of liberty to captives, and God's overcoming the powers of death. That's Sabbath time. Maybe that's what we long for when we try to create vacations for ourselves, is to enter into the deep truth of that centering and to just be. Every time we pray, every time we sleep, every time we take time off, every time we receive a gift, we return to that grace-filled point where we're loved for who we are, not what we do, where everything is a gift. And so I invite us to try to start there this day, and maybe tomorrow too, to start with a moment of Sabbath keeping where you remind yourself that God rested and God's love for you simply is. You can't vacate it. So you might as well journey in that love with God. Live deeply in that vacation and allow yourself to hold and maybe trust, as the psalmist says, to trust in a God that is liberating like that. That's why we call it rooting our lives in grace. Vacating our desires to feel worthy enough by keeping ourselves busy, we vacation in the reality of God's love that holds us. Allowing our vacations to be Sabbath as we're reminded to rest by the very pattern of God's creation and to remember the reality of God's deliverance that's been before us and will be with us in spite of us and long after us. So many of us will come back from vacations and will acknowledge that we're still in need of another vacation. Some of us will be tempted to go right back into cycles of busyness. I think that the psalmist longs for us in all of his wisdom at that old age to break from that cycle and to dwell deeply in the love of God that we come back to as we keep Sabbath. May that hope be ours this day and every day.
Sometimes time passes very quickly, it feels like, sometimes very slowly. When you have an hourglass, you can literally watch how slowly time can go. And so we're going to go into this prayer time with a little bit more time than we often have. And that'll make some of us uncomfortable, because it makes you uncomfortable to be present and relax into prayer or anything else for that matter. So here is the challenge. Matt used some of these words. We are encouraging you to go into prayer without an agenda today. Go in feeling worthless, which means take refuge in the fact that you just are a person who does not have to prove that you are worthwhile, that you are necessary in any way. You just are. And God is with you in being in that place. And when you go into prayer, you don't have to have already thought, this is what I'm going to ask God for today. Let that go. And remember why you came this morning. Remember when you woke up, the sense that drew you to a spirit-filled place, which would include some music and some words, but also some silence. And let's move into this silence together. If you've never lit a candle before at our church, I encourage you to just try that today. They're over in the window. Some of us want to stand instead, and that's in the back. But you can kneel here or simply be where you are in the pew. Casey will sing and the music will play, and we will be in prayer together.